Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with Eli Manning. All right, lucky for Eli Manning, they've turned the Pro Football Hall of Fame into a fairy tale story. If not for that, Eli would be the modern-day Jim Plunkett rather than a lock for a bust in Canton, Ohio. Eli will officially retire Friday, ending his 16-year career as a New York Giant. He had an outstanding career. He helped the Giants win two Super Bowl titles, slaying Belichick and Brady twice in football's biggest game. He was a Pro Bowler four times. He earned a record $252 million, edging his older brother Peyton by $3 million. But the truth is, if there was no Peyton Manning, there would be little likelihood of Eli's enshrinement in Canton. Eli is going to the Hall of Fame because he shares the same last name as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. Let me say this, I love the Manning family and everything they represent. Archie, Peyton, Eli, Cooper, all of them, they're the first family of football, nothing but respect. I just hate what's happening to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. About 15 years ago, Hall voters came up with the silly notion that the Hall was about narrative and story more than individual greatness and winning. Voters now say, if you can't tell the story of the NFL without mentioning this player, he must be in the Hall of Fame. It's a joke of a standard. It's a standard that says Aaron Hernandez should be in Canton. So should Ray Carruth. It's a standard that opened the door to a receiver that everyone knows for his size far more than his accomplishments. 6'8" Harold Carmichael. It's a standard that ushered in an offensive guard who wasn't a starter in two of the three Super Bowls he participated in, but was a member of an offensive line group that had a great nickname, the Hogs, Russ Grimm. The Pro Football Hall of Fame is sacred to me. The standard for player induction should be simple. One, barring catastrophic injury, was he a great player for a sustained period? Two, did he contribute to a winning environment? It's that simple. Nothing else needs to be considered. Turning the Hall into a fairy tale, a shrine for narrative over facts, was done so that voters who can't evaluate football would be on equal footing with those who could. They cheapened induction into the Hall of Fame in the name of diversity and inclusion. And now Eli Manning is a lock for the Hall of Fame. Eli had great moments in the NFL. He was never a great player. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst T.J. Houshmandzadeh and a guy who lost to Eli in a Super Bowl when he was on the Patriots, Rich Ornberger. All right, Marcella, start us off. Would Eli be a Hall of Famer if he had a different last name?
Absolutely. The body of work speaks for itself. Let's talk about that focus on his last name. To me, that's actually a setup for failure when you're talking about a great in association of Peyton Manning's your brother. We always talk about expectations, and they're tangible when you have an actual great player who's your brother. Expectations usually are vague when you're like, oh, he's going to be good, he's going to be great. What does that mean? I don't know. We're going to move the goalposts based on what we see. But when we know your brother's Peyton Manning, all of a sudden we know tangibly who to compare you to. And in some respects, he actually surpassed one of the greatest players to ever play the game.
Taller, Peyton Manning. Was he taller?
He's taller, more Super Bowl MVPs, more clutch, was able to beat his arch nemesis twice, not once, twice. So when they go play backyard football in their 50s, Peyton can't dominate the conversation. And more importantly, he beat him in two categories that I truly respect that I don't think a lot of people give enough credit
to. Looking? What?
Nah, the Peyton got him. That long neck, but the Peyton got him. One, in terms of durability, greatest ability is availability, consecutive starting streak. And more importantly, you know me, who made more money in their career? Lord, my boy Eli beat him even in the most important category. But all the things considered, you have to respect what Eli did. And I think looking at it in a vacuum compared to his brother, and for him to even surpass him in some categories, makes Eli a Hall of Famer no matter what's his last name.
If he had a different last name, will he be a Hall of Famer? Absolutely not.
he's going to get into the Hall of Fame. He had a good career, but he didn't have a Hall of Fame 16 years, 7 winning seasons. He's never been All-Pro.
I've been an All-Pro.
Me too.
He's never been an All-Pro.
All right.
And he did slay the Patriots. That year averaged basically 37 points a game. That defense held him to 14 points. That's that deep Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck, O.C. Umenyiura, those guys up front. He made a great throw to Mario Manningham. He made a lucky throw to David Tyree.
You
call her.
Was there a drop, an unlucky drop, or lucky?
No, I just dropped it.
Threw it then. He ain't luck.
Dude, that's we'll never see it again.
We ain't gonna see you
We'll never see it again. And so he had a really – I wouldn't have mind playing with Eli. I thought he was a good quarterback. But when you say, is Joe Flacco a Hall of Famer?
Don't do that.
He won an MVP and a Super Bowl. Is Nick Foles a Hall of Famer? A Super Bowl. If it's just off the – he's been to the playoffs and only won games twice. Any other time he's been to the playoffs, he hasn't won a game. He's a good player, but he's not a Hall of Famer.
8-4 in the postseason. He went on those two unbelievable runs, working his way through the wild card round to the Super Bowl, both times defeating – the best dynasty sports has ever known.
Does Eli Ornberger make it to the Hall of Fame?
Eli will be a Hall of Famer, and the reason why is on his own.
He didn't ask you that. Will Eli Ornberger make it to the Hall of
Fame? Yes, on his own merit. Eli Manning would make it the Hall of Fame. Could he be a first ballot because of his last name? Yeah, there's a possibility there. Look, the name helps. It certainly doesn't hurt. The family relationship with Archie and Peyton, a Hall of Famer as we speak, it's going to help the cause. But what he's done in the most dramatic and important moments of any quarterback's career are the reasons why he'll have a bust in bronze in Canton. I mean, it's inarguable. His best moments were in the most pressurized moments of his entire career. You mentioned the Manningham catch, the Tyree catch. Those throws were made by him, and on the Tyree catch, the escapability he showed to even get that ball launched with Rodney Harrison draped over his receiver for the reception to come down. It seemed like an impossible play from soup to nuts.
So you play 16 years, you have 2 really good years, you're in the Hall of Fame.
If you have 2 years like Eli Manning did and 5 double-digit winning seasons and winning your division 3 times and again,
out of 16
and
8-4
in the postseason, I'm impressed with it. And maybe my standard's slightly lower. On his own merit, he'd make it in. On his last name, he may be a first ballot.
Of the quarterbacks that have played from 1985 on that are in the Hall of Fame, Eli would be the last guy picked out of all of them.
Really?
Out of all of them.
Let me talk. Can I go here? Yeah. I saved the best of last for last to watch all you guys walk around thinking there weren't any traps being set. But damn it, I set some traps. In your Whitlog, you said that you wanted someone who could sustain excellence and create a winning environment.
Yeah.
Right? Is Joe Thomas a Hall of Famer by those standards right there?
No. Yeah, you don't have to have both.
Okay.
You have to have one in your sure ballot.
Winning
if you
two
have
Super
both.
Bowls, playing with Eli Manning, I think that's a winning environment. I have none, so I don't know. And I was in winning teams. That's one thing. Two, he slayed the Dragons on the road. 5 of his 6 playoff wins were on the road, including 2.
I watched one.
In Lambeau. But let's also respect that he's top 10 in major statistical categories. All time, passing yards, passing touchdowns.
16 years, you never miss a game. That's just from playing a ton of games.
Okay.
Boom. You know what he's basically called? Art Monk.
Ooh, I love y'all. And y'all thought I was going to give y'all my best trap first? Here's my best trap. Check out this full screen. When I show you 3 Hall of Famers, we're going to exhume their careers, dig up these bodies. 3 Hall of Famers who weren't exactly winners and combined have 1 Super Bowl championship and 1 Super Bowl MVP. 3 of them. And you're talking about records. Eli is a 500 quarterback. Joe Namath, under 500. Dan Fouts, a game and a half over. War Moon, a game over. We're talking about not being a winner and never winning at all. Those are 3 Hall of Famers that Eli Manning said.
Dan Fouts and Moon are both better than Eli.
Better in what way?
It's all subjective.
I'm looking at the numbers. Show me where.
You divide analytically quarterbacks. You're missing the point because this is all subjective. This is based off feel. When I watch Eli Manning and what he was able to do in 2 playoff paths to the Super Bowl and victories, hoisting the Lombardi Trophy, I saw greatness. And that's what this discussion is about.
Jim Plunkett.
Did you see greatness?
And Jim
Plunkett,
he won two Super Bowls.
But isn't the Hall of Fame a consistent level? Best to ever play.
Yes.
Like, when you talk Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And you say, when you played.
Mm.
No. Who's the best defensive ends from the time you played? Your name should come. Who are the best receivers? Who are the best quarterbacks? Your name should come up. When you say from 2014 to 2019, who are the best quarterbacks? Would his name ever come up
2004, in 2004, you mean, to
2019? Yeah, 2004. Would his name ever come up in any of those years?
Because you're using regular season excellence against him versus very good for a long duration. We have to respect.
Art Monk. Look, it took Art Monk up 2 decades.
And Warren, and look, you can look at Warren Moon, Dan Fouts, Joe Namath and say, wow, Eli actually has better numbers than those guys. But listen to this. But look at this. Then there's a Kurt Warner who had not exactly sustained excellence because it was a short window.
MVP twice.
But he was MVP twice. Thank you. So we're basically showing you there are different recipes to get into the Hall of Fame. Respect Eli's recipe. And this is my last point, because I played for Bill Parcells, the tuna. You know, tuna.
Big tuna.
Big tuna. How many Super Bowls did he win with the Giants?
Two, right?
How many did Eli win with the Giants?
Two.
The other two, right? And it's amazing. Tuna was a GOAT coach coming to Dallas. He's the GOAT. That's the GOAT before Belichick. He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT with two Super Bowls. How come Eli, who's the reason they get two Super Bowls,
because Jim Plunkett
is not respected at
because
least.
Jim Plunkett's not.
At least as
but
a
when
Hall
you
of Famer.
Hold the Patriots who averaged in 2007, 37 points a game to 14. And in 2011, they averaged 32. You hold them. Dude, that's that defensive line putting pressure. Did he make the plays?
What about Tom Brady and his early Super Bowls? We don't do that.
But he got too many to even debate. But he has too many.
And three MVPs.
And also more interceptions and touchdowns than he won one last year. Come on, y'all. Like,
greatness in the postseason cannot be underrated. And that's where he is rated the highest, is the fact that he took a team, again,
against
the greatest team we've ever seen in sports.
Six championships. Seven, whatever. Robert Horry. Going to the Hall of Fame. Eli's in. You're in.
Hey.
Narrative over facts.
Talking about ED isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. ED used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/speak to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/speak for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/speak.
All right, we're headed to Miami next Monday as Speak for Yourself and all of our FS1 studio shows will be live at Loomis Park on South Beach as we get ready for Super Bowl 54. We'll have special guests, audience giveaways, so come and join the fun. All right, welcome back. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Whitlock and Wiley, joined now by Fox NBA analyst Rick Bucher. Time now for a big story. Sponsored by KFC. Pick up any one of our $5 fill-ups.
I got five
today.
On it.
All right, let's talk Zion Williamson, who finally made his NBA debut and didn't disappoint after a slow start. Zion went on a tear in the fourth quarter, scoring 17 straight points and going 4-for-4 from three-point land. But maybe the biggest part of the night was Zion himself, who came into the game listed at 285 pounds, making him the third heaviest player in the NBA at just 6'6". Bigger takeaway last night, Zion's fourth quarter explosion or his size?
Oh, certainly that explosion, man. Amazing. Game one of your professional career, you gave the world a glimpse of your greatness. Like, everyone dreams of that. And usually your first game, it's just like, man, I didn't know how fast those guys were moving. You're in a blur, and it can't slow down. Your anxiety's kicking in, your adrenaline, the pressure. Kind of like how he looked in the first quarter, certainly just not knowing what's up. Did the court change in dimension and everything? And then for him to take that collective breath with his teammates, say, relax, bruh, We got a lot of these in front of us. And he, before this one ended, gave the NBA, gave NBA fans, and gave us something to say. This guy's going to be special. The fat shaming that's going on, or he's not in fighting shape. Look, I fully respected every part of that conversation, especially when you're talking about athletics. Mm-hmm. Let's not act like there's not a fighting shape. And then there's just a walking around shape. And there's an out of shape. And if you can't sit there and constructively criticize a guy for not being in fighting shape, then you're not doing your job. I respected him for saying those things.
Well, it's not just the shape, but it's the fact that you're talking about a guy who's had injuries. 9 minutes into summer league game, mm-hmm. Three games into preseason. And so, for me, the fourth quarter was the candy, and his size was literally and figuratively the meat. Mm. It's not, one, he's carrying some bad weight. And we've seen some guys, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, both carries probably more LBs than they should, but they're seven-footers. What scared me wasn't so much, it wasn't even the weight, it was the gait, as in terms of how he ran the floor. It looked like he was very stiff. I thought, wow, is that knee really okay? Or is he still having issues with it? And imagining him playing 82 games, having to get up and down the floor, running that way, carrying that weight at 6'6", 285, that's what scares me. So if he had gotten the big fourth quarter some other way than hitting 4 3-pointers, like, is that going to be his game? I don't think so. So he's actually raised more questions than delivered answers for me, but it bears watching. I just did a piece on load management, and when they sat him down, wouldn't let him play the end of the game to win the game, I thought that's what was rearing its head. But watching him run up and down the floor, I was like, no, please, because I want to see the kid continue to play, and I'm not sure if he can the way he's built.
Yeah, I think I was fascinated by his start to his NBA career was delayed. He has an injury. And as I know, and Marcellus knows, Rick, you maybe don't know as much, but weight loss is all about what goes in your mouth. It's really not about exercise. Mm-hmm. If you don't fix what goes in your mouth, you got no shot. I exercise my ass off. And so I was just like, they're all focused on a minutes restriction, and I'm like, I'm focused on a calorie restriction. Mm-hmm. Where has that been during this time off time? It hasn't been there, so they still don't have control, or they can't manage him. They can't get him to fully buy into what he needs to do to be the greatest player ever, or the greatest player possible. And that concerns me, because I've been that 19-year-old immature person that the coaches are on about, hey, we need to do X, Y, and Z. And I could never conquer it. And some people can't.
Yeah.
Some people have a sweet tooth, a forked tooth, or whatever that they can never get away from. And it concerns me that, particularly with the kid's injury history, because, again, Barkley didn't have this injury history, and he got away with being overweight for a long time. And then he finally realized and got in great shape and became an MVP. So I did leave the game, like, because I want this kid to be successful. I love his energy. I love his personality. I want it to be right and perfect and sustainable, and I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk about the physical part and how his mechanics aren't clean. And I think a lot of us are getting distracted by his size and saying that that's going to contribute to his injury. But it's really a greater issue than just how big he is. If you have clean mechanics, you can handle any load. We all know that through physics. However, people don't know. And two examples. One, we had a physicist come in and talked about how every time you lose a pound of weight, it feels like 9 pounds of pressure unloaded off of your body. Hmm. That's why when you hear a guy says, I lost 10 pounds this offseason, he looks dramatically different. You're like, that's only 10 pounds.
He moves dramatically.
He moves dramatically different. So that's one. And I bring you another example with Bruce Smith. And people kind of gloss over this, but his rookie year, he was like 300 pounds. People don't remember. Came out of Virginia Tech. 6.5 sacks. That offseason, he lost like 30 or 40 pounds and kept it off for the rest of his career. The next year, 15 sacks. And from that point forward, double digits basically every year. Simply by how he ate. He changed his diet. He wouldn't even run Bruce Smith is a Stairmaster king. So Stairmaster, great workout, not exactly intense for a football player, but because he watched what he ate all the time and hanging out with him off the field at his house, always disciplined like that. Until Zion gets to that place mentally, physically, this is just a ticking time bomb.
So for the record, I had this conversation with Chip Englund, the shooting coach for the Spurs. We were both suffering from being skinny fat. And it was like, you're built a certain way, but I had bad weight and I cut out bread and it transformed everything. How I felt, I lost weight that as no matter how hard I worked out, I could not get rid of. So I identify with that very thing. The tricky part here is with Zion is normally you would look at it and you say, okay, with a lot of things, when we're young, we don't always do the right things.
Yeah.
But being 6'6", 285, and the kind of game he's going to have to play to live up to the expectations that he has, on top of already having these two major injuries, lower body injuries, joint injuries, that's what scares me, that they've had all this time, that he's missed half of his first year, and it has not, to your point, it apparently has not changed his habits. Can he change those habits before he pays a bigger price?
Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houshmandzadeh is back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington. Let's move to Antonio Brown. An arrest warrant has now been issued for the out-of-work receiver after alleged burglary and battery against a moving truck driver outside of Brown's home. The warrant warns that Brown is known to carry a concealed weapon, and after Brown posted a racist tirade against police to social media last week, the police are clearly taking every precaution. Brown's rapid meltdown makes you wonder if he was getting away with this kind of erratic behavior during his 9 years with the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, so the question here is, do the Steelers deserve credit or scorn for their handling of AB?
I'm a lean credit, but I really want to extract the individual from their circumstances. It's about choices, man. Being from where I'm from, Compton, LA, South Central, all that stuff and all that madness, I saw so many people become products of the environment. And every single one of them that I knew intimately, I always remember the moment that they tapped out, that they actually chose to change their paradigm of what they really believed and valued. And it was always some stupid stuff to me at the time. So when I wanted to go home and study, I felt the pressure from my friends all of a sudden to just hang out and do nothing. I said, let's go in the house and do something instead of hang out and do nothing. Choosing to look fresh and clothing so they could get girls' attention versus just dedicate yourself to doing extra push-ups for this Pop Warner practice. Little choices. So I draw a parallel to this situation, and it's hard for me to blame or really credit the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I respect that they had someone who was a ticking time bomb and he didn't fully explode on their watch. But it's AB's choice at the end of the day. Maybe he has mental health issues that we're going to address going forward once he gets the proper therapy. But to blame a circumstance, to sit up here right now, if I go crazy up here at Fox, to look back at ESPN and say, y'all enabled that, y'all made Marcellus go to that place, I just don't believe in that. I distance myself from what's outer, from what's inner. Maybe AB could.
They deserve credit because he was a sixth-round pick. He was 195th pick of the draft, and they developed him into a good player. But they also have enabled him. And so for me, you can say they deserve credit and scorn because they truly enabled him. And in the world of sports, this is how things work. When you're a good player, we going to give you a lot of rope. We going to let you get away with a lot of things. And as soon as you get a little older and we can get rid of you or the things we put up with has gotten to the point where we can't tolerate it, now it looks like, oh, you let me get away with this. There were so many things that happened in Pittsburgh that we don't know about, probably never will know about. When I was playing in Cincinnati and we had all these arrests, it was so much more going on in Cincinnati that nobody never knew about because they enabled them. They hid it. They kept it quiet. And so they deserve credit because they developed him. We're talking on the football field. But outside of that, they enabled him truly. And now nobody is willing to go that extra. Even the Patriots were willing to give him a chance. Now he's self-destructed, and it's no turning back.
I give them credit, and I don't think that the culpability of saying that they enabled him really exists in this situation because it's his job. You've now been hired to do a job. It's not the employer's job to make sure that you're making the right decisions. They pay you to do your job. So you made that decision when you signed on the dotted line. Nobody had to be by his side and making sure he handles getting that check. So to me, when you're looking at a guy that had a Hall of Fame worthy career and possibly in the peak or prime of his career, you let him go. That says to me, you had an employee that could bring an all-star value to your company, but we could not move forward with you as an employee based upon the things that you're doing. If you look at any company, I would assume that they're going to handle things that way. I don't credit them with scorn because they enabled AB to do the things that he ended up doing when he became popular.
Well, I disagree with your take in this sense. I agree with TJ. I think there were so many things going on with AB that we've never heard about over the course of that 9 years because the Steelers kept it under wraps because they wanted his production. When I go back now and look in hindsight at what Big Ben, Juju Smith-Schuster, Mike Tomlin, their interactions with AB, I come to the conclusion like, wow, they put up with a lot of stuff from AB. And we never heard about any suspensions or discipline until that Week 17 game at the end of his career where they sat him down and finally they said enough is enough. And the reason why I say scorn, I lean towards scorn, is because when you don't discipline a person like this that's that out of control, they never have a moment where they try to self-correct. And it eventually leads to where we are a decade later, this guy holed up in his house, hiding from the police afraid to go in. And again, I'm not blaming the Steelers for where AB is now, but I do wish there had been more discipline of AB, and maybe some of it needed to be public.
Can I respond?
Because privately they may have.
Can I respond to that? Can I respond to that?
Yeah.
First of all, I don't think we know how much discipline action was being taken behind closed doors.
Fair
That's
point.
First. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I do not hear what's being said and say there is a uniqueness to the way things were being handled with AB versus any other player that comes through those doors and signs on to a franchise team.
Any team is what you're saying.
Hey, but AB has shown us you discipline him, you fine him, he's going to lash out. So it couldn't have been, when he was with, that's what happened with Mayock. They fined him, he didn't like it, he lashed out. If they were doing that in Pittsburgh, we would have heard about
but
it.
But I think at that time, the lion's out the cage. I think it's about important to say if you're enabling him, then it's about the growth process and how are you disciplining him as he's starting to turn into that big, fully grown lion. Every Hall of Famer I ever played with, every All-Star I ever played with was enabled. Let's stop that. All of them got extra permission.
In what way?
That's how sports works.
Let's clarify enabled, though.
I'm sure you got away with some things.
Trust me. I got away with a lot of things that the next guy who wasn't putting up them sacks couldn't get away with. So basically, let's transform names or bodies. You're not going to be able to do what I'm doing based on what my resume is saying. Here's the thing. I've seen amazing transitions from those same Hall of Famers that were enabled. From an LT to a Bruce Smith. And then obviously, sadly, we saw Junior Seau have the greatest struggle in terms of taking his life. So without consequence, permission's given, brother. And it's hard to bring consequences to anybody who's making plays.
They got rid of him.
Got rid of him.
At the end.
At the end. That's when the Lions already.
But at the end of dealing with him.
But this.
He was not at the end of his career.
You get. They enable you. They give you a lot of rope because they hope. A maturation process takes place, and you get to the point when you get to year 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 that, okay, you'll stop doing these things. And that's why they got rid of him, saw it was never going to end.
The reason they got rid of him is because it became a civil war. It was two big lions going. It was Ben Roethlisberger and AB. If it were anybody else and you could get any other disparity, AB versus a lesser guy, you know what happens to the lesser guy.
But
when
again,
it becomes those two guys, it's civil war.
But again, you could say both of those are Hall of Fame guys.
That's
two Hall of Fame guys.
They definitely are.
If you're going to make a decision, then you're making that decision not just based off of, oh, the color of Ben's skin or the position that he plays. You're making that decision based off of, professionally speaking, who can I get the best results and get the most return on my investment as a company? You're not looking at it any other way.
Well, who's more important? You play quarterback, you already got a leg up. Be real. Because you're low.
So it's 100% by position.
It's by position. Don't do that. But a receiver's going to phase out before a quarterback.
I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen.
Well, I've seen it happen.
All I know, and that's fine. But what I'm telling you guys, when you're looking at what's happening with AB, to say he was enabled, like, listen.
Let me give you a different example. Because what you all have said has been tremendous, and I really appreciate the conversation. But I'm going to relate it to my field and industry and why I don't like the way AB was handled by the Pittsburgh Steelers. The way I went about my career as a sports writer, I was polarizing, and it gave people license to attack me and criticize me. Mm-hmm. And so I, as a sports writer, I was not allowed to get away with anything. Mm-hmm. There were always consequences for my behavior. I was too polarizing. If I made mistakes, I was disciplined. There was blowback. I've worked with some people and saw a lot of people in my industry that had a different style of being a sports writer who were allowed to get away with all kinds of things because they wrote in a way that people found, they thought, oh, it was lovely, and it's so positive the way that they do. And those very same people were the people that got caught cutting corners and eventually embarrassed their newspapers by doing, and I'm talking about Mitch Albom, I'm gonna put a name on it.
Okay.
Won all these awards and everything. Okay. Then at the end of his career, got busted and embarrassed his newspaper. I could go to the guy I work with in Kansas City, wrote a book about Joe Paterno that embarrassed him and the whole profession, celebrated their whole career. No one ever held them accountable for anything. Mm. And those are the very people that end up blowing up in your face.
But based off of your interpretation of what you just gave us, is that enabling or is that accountability? Is that enabling or is that accountability? That person, those people that you speak of, needed to be accountable for their actions.
I agree, and they were held accountable. They were enabled.
Of course.
At their newspaper.
If you're not held accountable, let me ask you this. At the point in time where it blew up, were they still working at that place?
Yeah.
Okay, were they let go?
Hell no.
They weren't let go.
Mitch Albom is still
there. I don't know who he is.
But let me say, Mitch Albom's like supposedly the greatest sports writer in the last 30 years.
I give you a
Tuesdays with Maury, the book.
Yeah, Mitch went through it. Let me give you a lighthearted example for me. I like to tell on myself. I love the fact you gave names and numbers, though. That's what Coach said.
Yeah.
No anonymous quotes here. One day, I pulled up to our Chargers facility, parked on the curb, blasting in my Hummer, No Limit Soldiers, and I have 418s in the back, rattling the whole thing. They had chapel inside. Mm-hmm. Now, if I weren't who I was, I probably wouldn't have the audacity to do that, let alone when they walked out in the middle of the song while I'm just going in the locker room to get something, they say, hey, Marcellus, we're inside going to chapel. Want to join us? And now I look back in my mature self, looking back like, they didn't even tell me to turn that down as I interrupted everything.
All I'm telling you is
there's an enabling that grows into a person and into a situation that finally enough is enough.
A practice squad got at him like, turn that down.
Matter of fact, they probably took the keys from him. How about that?
You know that.
There's a different world for different
guys. You are being measured differently. That's fine. I'll go with you on that. But to say that enabled you, what did it enable you to do?
Because without any punishment, guess what I knew? Oh, the line just moved a little
more. Why did you need to be punished for having your music up?
That's how I punished.
Did you know there was a chapel going on?
Punish is not strong. It's just like someone said, hey, man, that's disrespectful, rude, to someone holding him accountable. Everybody needs
that. To a standard.
Again, I've argued everybody needs oversight. Everybody needs people to hold them accountable. I don't think it happened with the Pittsburgh Steelers and Antonio Brown.
TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2 and then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Rick Bucher's back with us.
Yeah.
All right, we're joined now by Baylor basketball legend and member of the Speak for Yourself staff, Nina Hoops Davis. Mm-hmm. Nina joined our team about 6 months ago. She was a Big 12 Player of the Year. She was two-time All-American, a Wooden Award finalist. My good friend, Baylor coach Kim Mulkey, recommended Nina join our staff. She works behind the scenes.
One of the hosts of SFY Next. That's where I get your props. Yeah, perfect, time. Perfect.
All right, so she's going to participate in our Darnell's question of the day. Mm. All right, homeboy, take it away.
Yes, sir. Let's move to the GOAT, Kobe Bryant. My guy's been busy in retirement, spending a lot of time watching basketball with his daughter, who is an accomplished player herself. Shout out to Gigi. Kobe was asked if he thinks a woman would ever have a shot at playing in the NBA someday and had an interesting response. Take a listen.
I think there are a couple players that can play in the NBA right now, honestly. I mean, there's a lot of players that have a lot of skill that can do it. Diana Taurasi, Maya Moore, Ella Delladon. I mean, there's a lot of great players out there, so they could most certainly keep up.
Wanted to ask you guys, do you think Kobe really believes this?
No, but I think Kobe's coming from a very authentic place. I think fatherhood and raising that daughter who is an athlete has overwhelmed him in a positive way, and you guys are dads. Kids will make you say goofy things.
Right, right. I want to state and preface this by the love I have for Kobe Bryant in terms of trying to empower his three daughters and strengthen them up to let them know that all things are possible. But boy, is this a crock. I'm telling you the truth. Let me tell you the real. I have two daughters and a third on the way, so I'm not going to say anything goofy. I'm going to keep it 100. I had a conversation with Lisa Leslie, long time ago, friend of mine, Lisa Leslie, a real GOAT, and Lisa Leslie.
I got a problem with that.
And we were talking about why the WNBA wasn't working. I'm throwing out all these crazy things like, you know what, lower the rim. I'm telling you, if it's 9 feet and they're dunking on each other, oh, it's a wrap, and all that stuff. And then finally, we morphed into the conversation of, Lisa, could you have played in the NBA? Could you have played against the men? And she looked at me and said, are you crazy? Do you understand the physics of that encounter? And that was the GOAT. And knowing Lisa and knowing going to WNBA games, it's a different animal. This is not a gender war. Women can do things that men can't do. Men can do some things women can't do. And then there's times where we could do it better, you could do it better. But this, at the core of it, is a loving father who's being a little disingenuous in terms of this conversation.
We never want to limit our kids, right? We want to think them to think that anything is possible and that they can accomplish anything, even though we may, as adults, know probably not all that realistic, but I don't want to stop you from giving it a shot. Yep. So I don't believe that he believes that women can play in the NBA. I think he wants his daughter to believe that she could possibly play in the NBA. So she can go chase that and try to be the best possible player or person that she can ultimately be. But Diana Taurasi is 6 feet, 163 pounds. She's now 37 years old. I mean, I could go down the line. Elena is 6'5", 180
pounds. Well, we got a good
pounds.
Basketball player up here, so let's hear from the only person who can actually hoop.
All-American.
Beast. Go ahead, hoop.
Let's hear it.
Hey, look, guys. Do he believe that? No. But being realistically speaking, can a WNBA player play in the NBA? Sure. All of us at this table right now, follow me. All of us at this table right now could play in the NBA. We could sit on the bench. We could be the 15th person off the bench, you know, get in when they're up by 40, when the starters need a break. We could be a practice player and collect a check. Sure. But would they make an impact? Would they be reliable? Of course not.
Even that I have to push back on. I love you, Nina.
Yeah.
But it's funny, we ever go to the rec center and see the dude killing the game, and then you see that 15th man who plays in the NBA who just shows up, get a workout. He is so much better than the rec center dominant guy. Let's respect the 15th guy in practice. Doesn't miss, but doesn't get into the game. So even to be the 15th man or woman on the NBA team, you are buckets. I don't think a woman could make the 15th man roster.
Big question I have is the difference in the ball. Because skill-wise, I could almost make the argument that the skills there are relative, but the size of the ball makes a huge difference. I'm sure you've played with a men's ball and you've played pickup with men with a men's ball. How much of a difference does it make in your game?
It makes a difference. The ball is definitely heavier. But that brings me to my point that at Baylor, and even when I was with the Sparks training camp, We scrimmaged against guys. Most of the top D1 basketball teams, you play against guys. And the point that you just made, we would play against guys that played at the rec center, so they're not nearly as good as an NBA player. We're talking about the best guys in the world. And I'm not going to lie to you, it was a challenge. They would beat us most of those games. So yeah, if we're talking about that level of rec basketball, you just have to look at the physics, the speed, the strength of a guy. He listed Maya Moore and Elena Deladon. Okay, they're forwards. So you mean to tell me that they're going to go to the NBA and guard LeBron? Right. They're going to guard Zion? Mm. They're going to guard Geek Freak as forwards? Diana Taurasi was a guard, right?
Yeah.
Kobe played guard. Mm. So, Kobe, you truly believe that BT could stop you in the NBA?
I don't think so.
I want to circle back to Kobe, though. And I say this in all seriousness because I've been a loud critic of Kobe as a player and the way he played, blah, blah, blah. But I'm telling you, I love Kobe post-career. And I love Kobe saying this because, again, I don't think he believes it, but I do think it's coming from an authentic place. And I think post-career, Kobe's been just a tremendous role model and someone who's trying to champion women's sports, goes to a lot of UConn women's basketball games. He's got these four kids and daughters, and he's all in on them to the point. And again, parents do it all the time. They're willing to be a little foolish in celebration of their kids.
I'll tell you this about Kobe, though, and this was before he retired. Anytime we would have a conversation about kids, about my kids, about family, he was an entirely different guy. The interest, he did a video for my kids when they started playing basketball about one, like, this is what you should work on, this is what you should do. And so he's always had that element, and to see him just extend that in retirement is no surprise at all to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's no more love you can have for a player than Kobe in terms of the most committed athlete I've ever seen. I don't care where you rank him in terms of all time, but this is a shaking hands and kissing babies take, and I don't like it. My son, if he comes, he's like, Dad, I want to be a gymnast when I grow up. I say, boy, you better sit down. You're going to outgrow that by age six. Like he goes to gymnastics right now. You got a limit to some things. You got to keep it real.
Let me ask you this, though, Marcellus, because I do think he's immersed himself in women's athletics. He coaches his daughter's team and all that stuff. So if he's immersed in that world, is it really shocking that he would say something a little over the top to champion that crowd?
I don't think so. I think he's just been an ambassador for the game. As you said, you can see in the past couple of years that he's going to WNBA games. He's wearing their gear. He's at the college games. He's actually training a lot of women players. So I think the simple fact that he's an ambassador for the WNBA and college women's basketball is great because that's what we need. So if you want to make a statement like that and it draws attention to players such as Diana Taurasi, Maya Moore, it's bringing more to the game. It's bringing growth. Like, people are like, oh, let me go look up Diana Taurasi. If Kobe feels she's good enough to play it.
Well, like most ambassadors and politicians, they talk out of both sides of their mouth.
They do.
They really do.
Come on,
promise
man.
A little more. Sure, than
underhand layups, man. All right, stop, coming up. Man, stop playing.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, joined again by Rick Bucher and Rich Ornberger. Time for the most fearless discussion of the day. All right, People Magazine reported that the family of Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers is dismayed because Rodgers stated in a podcast interview with his girlfriend Danica Patrick that he had misgivings about his Christian upbringing. Among other things, Rodgers stated, I don't know how you can believe in a God who wants to condemn most of the planet to a fiery hell. What type of loving, sensitive, omnipresent, omnipotent being wants to condemn his beautiful creation to a fiery hell at the end of all of this? I think Rodgers has misinterpreted Christianity and God's desire. The point of Christianity is to avoid the inevitable negative consequences of sin. But I don't want to nitpick Aaron Rodgers about his understanding of Christianity. I'm inspired that he thinks about religion. He's on a journey that will likely lead him towards enlightenment, hope, and optimism. Enlightenment, hope, and optimism are pillars of success and fulfillment. Rodgers is a cynical intellectual. He reminds me of Matt Damon's character in the movie Good Will Hunting. The super intelligent often fall into a cynical abyss. Their nature can be sardonic, pessimistic, and misanthropic. Misanthrope means hater of humankind. Christianity and most forms of religion are the cure for cynicism and misanthropy. It's my belief that Rodgers' cynical nature is holding him back as a football leader. Again, it's my belief that leadership and religion work together like a Big Mac and a large order of fries. Football and religion are sports' version of Thanksgiving turkey and my mama's oyster dressing. Football is best played and led by men filled with and espousing eternal optimism. Clemson's Dabo Sweeney is the classic football coach. So was Tony Dungy. I don't know their level of religious conviction, but Tom Brady and Russell Wilson play with a spirit and energy that rejects cynicism. A lot of people roll their eyes when they hear athletes praise God after a great performance. They question whether the athletes live up to their religious beliefs in all of their activities. The cynics miss the point. Religion inspires men and women to do and accomplish things they otherwise wouldn't have the mental capacity. Muhammad Ali knocked out George Foreman because he thought the rumble in the jungle was a religious holy war. My divorced mother of two boys worked long hours inside a factory and a second job because her faith in Jesus told her she could. The game of life and the games within sports are played best by the optimist. There's no greater supply of optimism than faith in a higher power. Aaron Rodgers' cynical mind is holding him back on the football field. All right, Marcel, let's get us rolling. Think cynicism limits Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback and leader?
No, not at all. Preface this by saying is I think it's very Christian of the Rodgers family to take issue with Aaron's spirituality, but I digress. We'll talk about that later. Attitude determines altitude. I think a lot of people take that and make it binary, positive or negative. You missed the boat. This attitude is about a belief in yourself. And if we want to stay in the Christian parallel, a faith in yourself is a faith in God because you're made in the image of God, if you want to stay in the Christian parallel. Aaron Rodgers doesn't have to be positive to believe in himself. He could be cynical and believe in himself, cynical in demonstration, cynical in action. But boy, you can't shake that belief in him and his abilities. And as the world turns, the goalposts move when it comes to Aaron Rodgers, the 24th pick, who could have been the number one overall pick, at least in his head, because he has that belief in himself. But who expected Aaron Rodgers when he was drafted on that day to become who Aaron Rodgers is right now? Go back to that day, go back to now. He passed a lot of positive. He passed a lot of people who were believers in themselves in a positive way. Christians, except Tim Tebow, more positive and more Christian than Tim Tebow. I dare you to give me a name. He's passed everyone to become top five at worst in the NFL at his position ever. So his attitude, I think, works for him. Maybe not the way you want to digest it, but certainly he's cooked up some success.
I agree 1,000%. Whether it's cynicism or it's unresolved introspection, something is holding Aaron Rodgers back. Individually, no. As a leader of a team, yes. I had this conversation with a former Green Bay Packer. And because I noticed Aaron never is rallying the troops. You've seen it with Drew Brees. You've seen it with Tom Brady. You've seen it with Patrick Mahomes already. You've seen it with Dwayne Haskins. You've never seen him appealing to the group, trying to lift the group up. And what, whether it's religion, Christianity, spirituality, the whole idea of that there's a power greater than ourselves and that we are in this together collectively is something that seems to be missing in Aaron Rodgers' portfolio. The belief, because I'll never forget, in another interview, he said, when he, after he won his first Super Bowl, is that all there is? As if the achievement of the championship was what it was, instead of, no, the reward is that you achieved something collectively that you could not do individually. That's what makes you go get another one. Let's feel this again together. And that seems to be what's missing when it comes to Aaron Rodgers as a leader.
But I appreciate the authenticity. I appreciate the fact that he is who he is, and nobody's going to talk him down from that. And if he does have unresolved issues with his own faith or his family's faith or questions about an omnipotent creator, I'm happy that he's expressing those thoughts, whether it be in private or publicly, because I think people play the best, they coach the best, they act the best in life when they are true to who they are. The same way I would be really upset with somebody who's faking Christianity or their religion and bringing God into the equation where they're just trying to expand their brand because they think that's a good look for them. Athletes and politicians do this. It's inauthentic. And it's disingenuous. And that is completely, I mean, it's you're seen. When you have teammates who view you as inauthentic, you can't lead.
Right.
So there's no shot. The fact that he is who he is and he makes no qualms about it and he doesn't change for anybody, I think it actually encourages me to believe that he is a better leader for that because this is who I am, accept me or not, and I'll do the same for you.
Well, I want you to think cynicism limits Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback and leader, yes or no?
No, I don't.
Okay. And so I think everybody has made accurate statements, but I'm not sure if we're all, because again, it's like faith in himself you talked about, and he has an extreme amount, and it's led to an extreme amount of individual success. And so what I'm talking about, quarterback is a leadership position, and I'm talking about him as a leader. Can he inspire others with his cynical nature? Does his cynical nature and supreme belief in Aaron Rodgers, does that work for the others around him? And I thought Rick made some great points. And so all I'm saying is, as a quarterback, this guy's got more talent than we've seen in any quarterback. And he hasn't had the level of team success that I think people expected, and he may get out of this career with just one Super Bowl. And I think if he had the same kind of happy-go-lucky, the sky is shining every day as Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Drew Brees.
Whoa. I played with Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. I can speak. I mean, as far as I know, I have no idea what faith he practices.
That's why I'm talking about cynicism versus optimism. Tom Brady's an optimistic person.
There's no doubt about it, but he's hard on his players too. And he's had more team success, so I think it's more acceptable. And if publicly it's viewed as more acceptable, and players seem to respond better to he than Aaron Rodgers, but that doesn't mean that the cynicism is what's getting in the way of leadership.
Sure, but does Tom inspire his teammates? However he may do it, does he inspire them?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, 100%.
That's where my question lies with Aaron. He's good. He's going to make you better. But does he inspire you to go above and beyond you are?
And his point, I mean, honestly, think of any endeavor. Optimistic people tend to be inspirational. Dr. Phil, whoever, or Jeff Robbins, or who am I thinking of?
Oh, Tony Robbins,
whatever.
Yeah.
Those are people, that, whether it's fake or whatever, they come out like the sun is shining every day.
Yeah, but you know what? It's funny. That's counter to football culture, which is cynical. Coaching culture is cynical. The grind is cynical. We're going to chew you up, and whoever survives that, now we got a team. And within that team, don't you ever get too high or too low. And when we have it even keel, we're going to self-correct and find all our flaws to make us better. It's not a positive experience being a football player in terms of the mentality. When you walk off the field and you know you killed it, but now you have to be responsible for the 53rd man who didn't show up for curfew. What the hell are you bringing this to me for? That's cynical as hell, coach. And I'm telling you, Drew Brees, who I played with, is a very positive person who has the same results in terms of Aaron Rodgers in terms of team success. One Super Bowl championship. And Drew Brees is tremendously talented. What's flawed is our evaluation. The flaw is in
Aaron, though.
Nobody probably is as talented as Aaron, but that's the flaw. We make the equation that talent means team success. No, this is an input to a greater collective that hopefully we get team success. I'm going to leave the sport and go to Kobe. Kobe was cynical as hell, and he inspired those guys by either using fire to warm you or to burn you. But either way it goes,
fear.
We're going to get to this mountaintop.
Belichick. was a tremendous leader. Did I feel like I was being showered with optimism and praise at every turn of the hall in that facility? There were long hallways. There were times where we would be walking on opposite ends of a corridor, and for 40 feet, I couldn't look the man in the eyes. Fear is a very important piece of the leadership puzzle.
I believe Tom Brady's just as critical to their success. Those guys worked in conjunction very well. One guy... Bad cop, good cop. Yeah, good cop, bad cop. I just...
Don't forget, though, with Parcells and Belichick. I hate to play for the Giants back in those days. who's the positive one?
But I'm going to say this. The thing about faith and the truly spiritual person, even when they're in the depths of hell, they think they're there for a reason, and they think they're coming out on the other end on top. That's why, trust me, when people go to war or go to prison, they catch religion.
So, again,
football is often equated to war and a military mindset, and you're about to go something through so tough. And if you don't tap into your optimism that a lot of times is driven by your faith in God, you're not going
to
survive.
You may go to war and catch religion, but more people have went to war because of religion. But I'm not going to go there as well. So, look, it gets you all kinds of ways.
You made the comparison of Will Hunting, and in the movie, Matt Damon, who was intellectually curious, didn't have religion or faith in much, and then he found earthly love, and he chased after it, and it had a happy ending because of it. Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion, loves football. I've watched this guy. I've heard from teammates. Mm-hmm. The guy is a tremendous competitor, and he said for the first time in years he felt happy this season. Felt like he was having fun again. Mm-hmm. I think that you can build a faith structure outside of the constructs of religion and still be inspirational and still have faith in something bigger than you.
Rick, and I don't disagree with you. I just said faith tends to be the strongest supplier of optimism. There's other ways to be optimistic. He's cynical. And one of the other things I said very clear was, I just want to be clear here. I think this guy is on an incredible journey. I'm glad he's talking about this publicly, engaging in these types of conversations. I can't say I haven't been exactly where he is, where I've had these questions. How can someone omnipotent? And I had a very immature understanding of Christianity at that time and asked these questions. I don't know where his journey's going to wind up. I know he's on it. He's intellectually curious. I'm having this conversation to say, hey, Aaron, tap into some optimism, man. Look around at the guys that are doing it at the highest level, the way you want to do it. They're a bit more optimistic than you. I think you're smart people, and it's because of his intelligence. You can become very cynical. When you know the conclusion and you're waiting on other people to even find out what the question is and you already know the answer, it's frustrating.
Well, I think that we also have to respect that we all wear it different. Like, some people are very happy, but they just, like, have this look to them that's like, what's going on behind you? They're despondent. But they're still internally happy. Not everyone walks in the room and says, how you doing? Like, we rate that guy as the happiest. But you know what? Maybe that guy is trying to really protect from some things
inside. But I'm not even trying to rank him. I'm just trying to say, what's a better leadership model? What will work for a quarterback and inspire that team? I care less, really. It's just like, you have to adopt some behaviors that fit the job that you have, that allow you to do the job as most effectively. And I just think adjustment in his personality, optimism, might be a cure.
All right, LeVar Arrington's back. Let's move to the 49ers. Mm. Sponsored by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Jimmy G and company have been winning smart all year, defying everyone's expectations. To make it all the way to the Super Bowl, Garoppolo's individual performance has been up and down, but the team is 21-5 since he took over as starter. It hasn't hurt that he's had one of the best play callers in the league, Kyle Shanahan, calling the shots the whole time. All right, the question here is, would Jimmy G be a winner without Kyle Shanahan's system?
Absolutely, if you want to listen to Bill Belichick and his belief, his grasp of trying to keep Jimmy G before he even played a snap with the Patriots, almost brought that dynasty to an end in terms of just crumbling what was at their core. They wanted him to be the successor.
for obvious reasons. He's traveled across the country and now is taking that team to the Super Bowl by hook or crook. Whether you want to give him credit or blame, Jimmy G has something special. Even before Kyle Shanahan, that's why Belichick believed in him.
I'm going with yes as well. And a lot of it has to do with the thought process that you put out there as well. Is basically he's learned to win. And he had the opportunity to learn to win without having the pressure of being a starter. So when you think about going through that process of how you study film as a pro, how you practice as a pro, a lot of times I say one of the biggest things that ruins a football player coming into to their rookie year and their early years is they're pushed out there and they're thrust in there to have to figure it out on the fly. Yeah. Much like Tom Brady, Jimmy G did not have to do that. He had an opportunity to learn not only from Belichick, but learn from Tom Brady. So yeah. I think he would be successful in another situation, given that the place he went to play was a good place to go play.
Yeah, it's a great place. Look, we know Kyle Shanahan as a play caller right now, probably the best in the NFL. A lot of people will want to attribute all of Matt Ryan's success to Kyle Shanahan, but let's not forget, after Kyle Shanahan left, Matt Ryan, in his second year without Kyle Shanahan, had numbers that mirrored his MVP season with Kyle Shanahan. So you said you made him a Matt Ryan. Guess what? Matt Ryan went out there and proved without Kyle Shanahan that he was something. I think the same situation would be true with Jimmy G if he was afforded the opportunity. But why should he even want that? He's on the Super Bowl
team. You're on the Super Bowl team with an opportunity to win a Super Bowl. He's been a winner since starting, what, 7-0? Ben Roethlisberger is the only one to hit that feat as well. So I think he certainly will win.
Yep. Now, Darnell, people getting fired up. Everybody's pumped for the Super Bowl. Is there a Super 6 contest for the big game in
Miami? Sir, there is. And our guy, Terry Bradshaw, was guaranteeing a $250,000 cash prize Super Bowl contest. So make sure you download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for your chance to win.
Hey. Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating.
He's back.
For Eli Manning. But first, the big dummy of the day.
Oh, we know. Oh, it's on.
We know.
It's on.
Big dummy of the day go to the person.
Smoke
now
it.
We know why you made the analogy of Big Mac and fries in the Bible, huh?
Smoke it. Smoke it.
Smoke it.
I ain't the smartest man, but.
Smoke it.
All right, let's talk some Eli Manning, who is retiring after 16 years with the Giants.
Only a friend.
Eli led New York to 2 Super Bowls, but definitely had some down years as well. Meanwhile, another New York legend, Derek Jeter, just got voted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Marcellus.
Yes.
Who has a bigger New York legacy, whew, Eli or Jeter?
Oh, Jeter, by far, man. I've been in New York City and seen both of those guys, and just the response that they get in the Big Apple, tremendously different. Derek Jeter, I mean, left with a perfect legacy if you want to talk about his on and off the field career. And you talk about Eli, there's still some imperfections in his career, his resume, so I say it's Jeter.
Yeah, I think it's Jeter without question.
No doubt.
One guy is a unanimous Hall of Fame, or damn near unanimous, all but one vote. Other guy, it's going to be a little bit of a fight, I think, a scrap to get into the Hall of Fame, is Derek Jeter. Play for the Yankees. All them titles.
Come on. 27.
All right.
27.
Uncle Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a take on the Eli Manning as a Hall of Famer and me saying that, you know, he's only getting in because of Peyton Manning's his brother?
Well, put it like this. You ever heard the phrase of know your role?
Know your rope or
know rope? Your role.
Role.
Oh, know your role, yeah.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pop your own corns.
A bar ball.
Huh? Well, you know who has? Eli done heard this. And he done heard it all his life. So that make the boy a first ballot Hall of Famer. Because he's a consummate professional role player.
He's stupid.
Meaning he always has and he always will be number two to his big brother Peyton Manning.
Mm.
And he ain't got no problem with that.
Mm.
He don't mind being overshadowed by his big brother's greatness. Just like neither one of y'all managed to be, it don't bother y'all to be overshadowed by my greatness. You know, and this just goes to speak to the greatness of Eli. Look, man, you don't know what it's like to be the side piece in your family all your life. That's what makes Eli great. See, and this is why he was able to lead the Giants for all them years. You know, it was nothing that the New York media could say that could compare to being Peyton's little brother. You know? Look, man,
man, if he wasn't Peyton's little brother, I guarantee you, that boy couldn't get a guest spot on Duck Dynasty with Cousin Sal. You know, tell me something. How many beauty contests has Eli Manning ever won? He ain't never won one. He ain't never has and never will be one of Archie's favorites.
Mm. Wow.
But he played his role.
Okay.
Just like Tito played his role with Michael. That's what the greats do. Hey, man, it ain't nothing worse than having a two or a three thinking that they're one. You know what I'm saying, Douglas?
I do.
Hey, as they say in church, reach over there and touch your neighbor if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, yes.
See, my nephew ain't never had no problem like that. He don't know nothing about no twos or threes. He can't hold on to a one. Look, Douglas, you ever been rolling down the strip with your two or your three? Got the windows tinted, you rolling, got the music going nice. What's the first thing she want to do? Let down the window, turn the music up, and stick her head out the window. Looking like a damn St. Bernard. Huh? That's when you know you got the wrong one. Look, man, a lot of these athletes could learn something from Eli.
All that attention, huh?
Look, T.I.T.O.
T.I.T.O.
If you had accepted the fact that you was a number two to Donovan, you would have had this problem. Mm. Hey, Odell, if you would accept the fact that you were the number two to New York, you would have had this problem. Antonio Brown.
Ooh.
Just as soon as you accept the fact that you're number two to the Hollywood Police Department. I mean a number two. Doo-doo. That's you, bro. Oh,
all right, let me get to my approval rating for Eli Manning. Get back to the bathroom. I got Eli at a 72 in All-Star, up a couple points in job performance, up a couple points in character.
Smokey!
Handled being benched very well, 72 All-Star.
All that talk of that enema you were talking about. Big Mac and enema. Oh, that's,
and the Bible.
That's deadly. I got to make ghost status, man. That dude overachieved, man. Talk about he's Peyton's brother. That's a success story written for you. And guess what? He lived it up.
The internet agrees with me, 68%. All right.